Hello, welcome to Question War, Organizing Resistance. I'm your host, Carol Brier. Today is July 14th, and our show is Preventing Global War with Michael Andreg. And Michael has written a book called On the Causes of War, and it's an award-winning book which examines war from many different angles, and it received the National Peace Writing Award in 1999. It's been reprinted twice and republished in Canada and translated into Italian. He also produced with a nonprofit that he started called Ground Zero Minnesota, Rethinking 9/11, Why Truth and Reconciliation Are Better Strategies Than Global War. And he has a very interdisciplinary background. He teaches classes, but he also has looked deeply into the intelligence agencies and even written and produced educational programs on teaching ethics to such entities as the CIA and the DIA. And he won a Golden Candle Award for bringing light to the dark corners of the intelligence community. And this is pretty extraordinary to me. And I'd like to welcome Michael to the show. How are you? Michael?
Hear me?
Can you hear me? Now I can hear you. How are you?
Okay, yes, I could hear you the whole time. And thanks very much for sharing this audience.
Well, I really have to ask you, though, how you ended up working with spies and actually organizing panels for spy conferences. This is pretty amazing
to
me.
It's very weird. It is different, but it's actually real straightforward. I was a geneticist at the U of M hospital, and I decided war was a bigger health hazard than the rare diseases I worked on. That was back in 1978. And I became a specialist in the causes of war instead. And it turns out you can't really understand wars if you don't know what's going on in the spy world, at least something, because they're very important to whether wars start or don't start. So that's how I came to be interested in and study and get to know a whole lot of intelligence professionals, which is their preferred term. They prefer that to spies.
I
there's like one
that.
Variety of the 57 varieties of guys in spooky, spooky land.
But tell me, like, in just even talking to these guys, after reading your book on the causes of war, I think one of the interesting things is when you look at spies and cults and the culture,
right,
and how people in the intelligence world are perhaps the most depressed, the most suicidal, the ones whose lives
end. Well, some of them are.
Divorce.
They have very high rates of suicide. That's one of the little secrets of that world. They live a very high-stress life, actually, a lot of them. But not all of them. There's a big difference between operators and analysts. Analysts are like professors that, you know, go to secret offices and read newspapers all day long. I exaggerate. But there's a lot of different kinds of people in that world. But studying them does help a little bit when you're dealing with a contemporary mystery like 9/11, because it turns out there were spies involved behind the scenes, and they had ulterior motives, and it gives you some perspective on how to deal with it, I think. It gives me some perspective anyway.
Well, your excellent film on Rethinking 9/11 and Is Truth and Reconciliation Preferable to Global War? Is very interesting. In the very opening, you say there are other possibilities besides it was an inside job, that perhaps spies enhance effects, enabled expense.
Right. I go through a bunch of different. Right.
Yeah, and the possibilities. Now, I did have, I was really fortunate to pick your brains when
I
met you in Minnesota, but I thought what was really interesting was that you said that in covert operations that 95% or some incredibly high percentage of
they
covert
operations. They don't work out right.
Right.
Right. Right.
So with 9/11, would you say it was a botched covert operation?
To the extent that nothing is perfect, you and I are talking about it because some things happened there that people are still can't fit with the official story, like Tower 7 coming down and many other things don't fit the official story. So there's a counterculture of people like you, of whom you're a leader, a real leader, Carol, in trying to get the truth out. But are they prevailing? No, because they're up against secret power systems that are so much more powerful and so much more deeply rooted in things in America, as I'm sure you know. So you're up against quite a challenge trying to get the truth out, where half of your problem is control of the major media that they will not look at taboo areas. And this is a big one. Because why? Because somebody wants to start a global war based on this storyline of 9/11 and has succeeded. The question is, will they be able to keep doing that for 30 or 40 years and draw stupendous military and intelligence budgets all that time based on the idea of protecting us against terrorists that take down major economic centers, targets, you know?
Well, I thought one of the most interesting things about your book was that you said that in order to have wars, what you need are competing narratives where people have, like, different histories. So in order to have a civil war or even a war between nations...
Well, I was talking about some... This is common in wars, to have completely different ideas of what's going on around you between the two sides that are fighting.
Right.
And they both think
history,
that God is on their side and so forth, and as people know.
With 9/11, if we have a divided population and some people believe, say, the official narrative and then other
right.
people don't, doesn't that sort of create the grounds for also civil war in this country?
Well, if there was a strong enough difference of opinion on that, and it could happen. But I don't think, I'm not predicting a civil war in the United States today. I'm a war forecaster. Official forecast, no civil war tomorrow. A lot of dissension and a lot of irritation and tremendous frustration with the central government for 20 other reasons besides 9/11. 9/11 isn't the only reason why people are upset with our federal government, and have been for 70 years, actually. So I would say, cutting to the current moment, I would encourage everybody to do constructive things tomorrow and to urge the government or other power centers to do constructive things about the whole crisis in front of us, of which World War and 9/11 and everything related to it is just a piece. Just flipping over to global warming and global energy, how are we going to power our children's future? That is all worthy of tremendous effort, whether or not we solve exactly who did 9/11 how. And when spies get involved in doing a really evil thing like 9/11, they make it so murky that you may never know, or you certainly may never get a consensus as to exactly who did what. You know what I mean?
I understand that, and I think one of the reasons there is a 9/11 truth movement, at least for...
Oh, and we need you desperately.
Well, those of us in San Francisco and in the Bay Area, one purpose is to expose the mechanics of false flag operations.
And do,
so they
please,
can't,
do.
So they can't do them again. And
exactly.
Again, and
that's
again.
The only defense for us against them doing it again and getting away with it again. Is people
right.
knowing, because you educate them.
And I think, especially now, I mean, I know you've been on vacation, but Kucinich did introduce an article of impeachment last Thursday.
Focusing on the lying into Iraq war, you said the other day. Was it
precisely.
That's what you're focusing on?
Precisely.
Well,
and
one.
I know his intention, too, when he introduced the original four articles of impeachment, was to prevent a war on Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And
which remains a very serious possibility, which I try to watch every day. When I'm at my computers, I'm watching it every day.
Yeah.
But
and,
so
and
are it, hundreds of other people.
Right. But it seems like the more light we cast on 9/11, the less likely they are to be able to pull off another
right.
one, especially a nuclear one in this country. And I know we've gotten lots of rhetoric promising us a nuclear 9/11, including the corporate documents which lay out their plan for the North American Union, say basically without another 9/11, the Americans, Mexicans, and Canadians aren't going to go along with this.
No, they're not going to go along with the North American Union any day soon, and I wouldn't predict that any day soon. Although there have been people talking about it for, again, 70 years or so, and there's always a little talk about integrating the whole of North America. But I wouldn't worry about them. There are hundreds of these secret power systems competing for who's going to rule the world. And they're going to be doing it tomorrow. And one thing that's hard to get a grip on, actually, when you uncover a very serious mystery with huge consequences like 9/11, is that these guys have been competing over who's going to rule the world for centuries. So the drag that they bring to the global economy, they're enormously expensive. They're parasitic, actually. These huge organizations that thrive by promoting wars.
Mm-hmm.
They are very parasitic in their effect on the overall economy and health of the society, but they've been here for centuries. So the point is, it's not like the society is going to keel over tomorrow because of the weight of these massive parasites. I shouldn't be speaking so bluntly on the public airways, but that's how they act functionally. They are useful if the society is under lethal threat. Then all of a sudden they're useful, and they're not parasitic. They're actually essential for life. But otherwise, they're just these big suckers of energy away from useful things. We're not going to fall apart because they're in charge. They were in charge last year too, and 10 years ago, and 20 years ago. You know what I mean?
I know that, and I noticed in your book you said that perhaps the best technique is not to even try to defeat them, but just to cast light on them, and that makes them less.
And get them to change. Actually, I would strongly encourage that kind of idea, casting light on them and rolling them back a little bit, as opposed to expecting total victory and complete eradication of the forces of evil. That never seems to happen, no matter how joyful it would be. You do manage to roll them back sometimes, and you roll them back when the whole society or larger fractions of society get mobilized, and they all turn their lights in that direction. They work in that direction like working on a forest fire, you know, and you push it back. But we never have enough focus as a civilization to actually eradicate evil. We just roll it back and then hold it for a while and then get preoccupied with bread and circuses or something else and go attend to other things, and it starts to creep on back into the backyard.
Well, I just want to ask you, I've been reading Peter Dale Scott's book on The Road to 9/11, and he talks about...
He's very brilliant.
Yeah, these competing power interests, but also the privatization of the intelligence agencies,
mm-hmm.
like the off the shelf. Okay, we'll get the foreign intelligence agencies.
That's one of the
to
bad
do the
things,
work and the
right.
dirty work, and it gets incredibly complex because Congress doesn't know, the CIA doesn't know, and there's these off the shelf.
Well, there are a good 10 serious issues in intelligence. If you wanted to itemize things that should be fixed in the intelligence community, that's one, where anybody with enough money can just buy capability from a commercial inventory of outfits that'll provide this and that for spies, you know. That's what you're talking about, and that's what he's talking about when he worries about privatization of intelligence, and it's a very legitimate worry. There are many... Do you want to go into listing them, or do you want to talk about 9/11, or do you want to talk about current events, or your work being a fertilizer of great ideas in bringing 9/11 truth out?
Sorry, I just in understanding 9/11, actually, I think because you have looked more into it. I've read Peter Dale Scott's work, but I became an activist looking into intelligence agencies.
You were way ahead of me on this one, on 9/11.
Yeah.
You were. I didn't get into this recently at all. I mean, I didn't get into it early on. I got onto it late because of pioneers. many pioneers like you and Thompson and others.
Well, let's
we'll
let's
get back
to
together.
This conversation after the break.
Okay.
News, politics, cover-ups, government corruption. You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
WTPRN.
Let's impeach George W. Bush. It's long, long overdue. While we're at it, let's make sure to impeach Dick Cheney, too. Pair of world-class criminals like you never seen before. Start impeachment right away and stop another war.
Hello, welcome back to Pushing War, Organizing Resistance. I'm speaking with Michael Andreg, author of On the Causes of War and Rethinking 9/11. And Michael, I wanted to ask you, because you have looked into the spy world, as you say, much more deeply than I. When you look at the evidence of other intelligence operatives having a hand in 9/11, have you looked at things like the Nade brothers, who captured the first attack?
The French brothers.
I mean, it seems like their documentary was designed to help create the myth, the heroes, the fire.
I doubt that. Might be. When you get into these kinds of questions, all questions are appropriate. There's no question that's inappropriate when you get into assessing whether or not there were spies involved in an event, okay? But on that particular one, were the Nade brothers plants that were sent there by some secret hand in order to influence our perceptions? My answer would be no. No. They were most likely just who they claimed to be, and they happened to catch that visual, and that's that. And there are many other, there are thousands of other possibilities. But I'd say, at the same time, I think there's very good evidence that Mossad was there, that the ISI from Pakistan was there, that powerful people in Saudi Arabia were involved as funders, and that very powerful people in the United States were involved, aware of what was going on and manipulating it. Well, those are four secret power centers that I can focus on, name, and the process just is one of looking at the whole thing and picking out which secret power centers can you really find evidence for and focus on versus all the thousand other possibilities that are always present in an event like that.
The only omission, do you see the
hand of
the
British? You can shut me up anytime.
The MI6,
I have been conspicuously, I noticed that I have seen no evidence on MI6, and I've been very curious about that. I have no clue. It would be so odd for everyone else to be involved and them not to be involved. But I personally have not seen evidence. Have you?
Well,
let me know, please.
Yeah, Peter Dale Scott, when he looks at the paymaster, it seems like he identifies...
Which one? Which paymaster?
Saeed
Omar Sheikh?
Yes.
Saeed Omar Sheikh? Okay. He sees an MI6 hand in there?
That might
very well be, and I haven't seen that.
Because it sounds like he was protected and he actually studied in London.
He studied at London School of Economics, which would be an appropriate place to put the finger on somebody, but just thousands and thousands of students have gone there that were not recruited by MI6. Does Peter say straight up that he thinks that MI6 recruited him? I mean, that would mean a lot. Peter's a very careful thinker.
Right. No, he did mention that in his research that it looked like he was protected And he could easily have been working for the MI6.
But that's still protected. A lot of people get protected that are not actual agents. Well, I will be curious, and I will, if I'm lucky, I will inquire and find out much more specifically, because I have been curious, just what I said before. MI6 has not been present in any of the other information flow that I've had. None of it has it been there. And that itself has been kind of odd.
Huh.
You know?
Well, have you also looked at the Bali bombings and the London bombings?
No, other than the superficial, I'm aware of them and you know a couple of headlines. But the short answer to you is no. And that's the practical reality, is there's never time and resources to investigate all of these things, or even one-tenth of them. So you pick which ones you're going to put time into. And if you're lucky, you pick judiciously. Otherwise, you're just swamped in mysteries. And the reality is, actually, can I push that a little bit? Because there's a tendency in this, an area like this, to spend the rest of your life trying to answer every one of the 999 unanswered questions about 9/11 or some other stated John F. Kennedy or Martin Luther King murders. They're always unanswered questions. And you can spend the rest of your life trying to answer them, but I am always thinking, what should I be doing tomorrow to improve the world of tomorrow? Forget history for its own sake. And I would say, since the strategic purpose of 9/11 was to start and promote global war, that I want to do something tomorrow that will reduce the probability or ferocity of that global war. That's my point. Whether I know exactly who did 9/11, exactly how, or not.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. In fact, that's one reason that, I went out in the streets and started doing something.
And congratulations on the many things. I hope your campaign's going well. I hope your health is okay. I hope that your spirit is up, even though we face these daunting problems.
Yeah. Well, I think it is a balance. And I know, for me, just to... I need to do the research, and I get a lot of stuff coming my way, and I can't process it all. And I also need to organize, and it is a challenge. You can't do everything, and you have to.
No, and you should never feel bad about the fact that you cannot do everything. May I venture another piece of strategy? I see I can babble forever, but I can shut up too. Referring back to Kennedy and Martin Luther King, for example, I think that the broad scholar that wants to solve all the universe's problems should be aware that evil forces murdered them too. But working on this 40 years later won't solve any of the problems of today. It might just wake up a few more innocents about the fact that political assassination is a big deal and works and so forth. But anyway, that was another piece of what should we do to try to reduce war coming out of me.
But I think your book, I mean, you went to a lot of different people and you picked their brains. You got you did a lot of interviews. And I know from my research, too, I couldn't do 20 or 30 years of research on
I spent 23 years. That requires fanaticism.
Yeah, but that is one of the benefits of reading. I mean, you could sit down and read a book in a few hours and get the gist. Somebody else's 20 or 30 years of effort.
Right, that's the virtue of reading right there. Go get them.
And then I think what is wonderful, I mean, I really appreciate the time and effort Peter Dale Scott and David Ray Griffin and all these researchers put into their efforts, because it seems like each piece of the puzzle helps us get a bigger picture of
well you're
of
mentioning
the
best
pattern.
Ones yeah David Ray Griffin, also another great scholar in the area, and has devoted years to surfacing the truth on this. Now you live right here in California, where both of them are based. Have you met them? Could you call up Peter Dale Scott if you had a serious question and ask him, and he'd say
sure,
Carol.
Sure. They're friends.
Super. Well, use them well, because this struggle of America's mind to wake up to reality, that is fundamentally your task, is to get America to face reality so that we can solve some of these problems rather than blundering around in the corners, which is what we're doing now.
Well, that's one reason I mentioned these competing narratives, because just last weekend I was out tabling in San Jose for the Green Party, and on my way home I was surrounded by a group of Marines who were trying to convince me of how incredibly evil
the people of Iraq were.
And they were also totally convinced that the BBC made up Building 7, that it didn't really exist. It was that left-wing BBC's creation.
I wish I had been there, but the music comes.
Whoops, yes. Okay, well, let's continue.
We'll reconnect and...
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Well, that's Martin Oak singing Building 7, and welcome back. And Michael, I mentioned that the Marines surrounding me, they actually did think that the BBC was a left-wing, you know, entity that fictitiously created. They just wouldn't listen to me or even adhere to the fact, or, you know, even... You know, there was just that absolute total...
Well, I really wish I'd been there. and I could tell you how I would approach that situation, but there are thousands of such situations, and it'll take thousands of very well-educated and very adroit people, because in that particular situation, I would talk to them like a soldier, and I'd talk to them a completely different level about these problems. And I wouldn't transform them either, but I'd hook them a little bit and get them rethinking and moving a little bit in the direction we want. I am almost positive, because I almost always do, when I'm faced with those situations. But I have to do it one-on-one. I don't do it by a newsletter or electronically. I don't do it wholesale or efficiently. I do it very inefficiently, one-on-one, with individual people. And convince them by force of personality as much. And the first thing I do is not argue at all about 9/11. I establish a solid common ground in the case of a soldier with protecting the country. I talk to them about our need to protect the country from the various dangers out there, which there's a bunch of them, and major complications. You can't trust people like Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld because they've committed treason to make the country follow their strategic vision instead of anybody else's, and they committed treason to do it, which has all kinds of huge negative consequences that a soldier can relate to without getting into any left-wing, right-wing stuff right away. Then if they challenge me on why, I can be responsive as to why I've reached such dark conclusions. But as a brother with them in defending the country, you see what I mean? Having established a rapport, as I'm with you on defending the country from evil people.
I understand. I actually ended up surrounded by these Marines because I was talking to
so
a guy.
Because you're so cute.
Who...
No, I'm sorry.
I was talking to I was talking to a guy who was on a bicycle cab, and he was actually very interested and very open, and when the Marine was telling me that Building 7 didn't exist, he was actually trying to argue for me, saying, no, it really was there.
Uh-huh.
You know, she's not making this up. But
the guy I was talking with initially,
but then he was just surrounded by these Marines.
Let me stress another thing. Can I, about tactics really fast?
Sure.
It's about emotion much more, and first, before it's about facts and reason. And all of your debating points on the BBC and Building 7, for example, with which you could win an argument over, did Building 7, was it real, and so forth. You can win on that, on the facts, right? But my point is that you're a long ways from having that factual discussion about Building 7. In most discussions, like with those Marines, the first thing is winning the emotional one about getting them to give a rat's ass about what you think and be a little responsive to you as a human being with an idea about what happened, rather than just being dismissive and, oh, the BBC made that up. Because they can do that all day long and fight off reality for, you know, like decades. People can't.
Yeah.
People will defend their ignorance to the death. Never forget that in the social transformation business, which you're in.
And
and press on anyway. You do a marvelous job being creative and pressing on.
And there's some people that you really don't need to waste your breath on, because you probably will never
very slowly.
you'll never influence them. And then there's people who you might be able to.
Right. There's always that penumbra of others, of people that are watching, that include ones that are much more likely to change their mind based on what you say.
Right. And then there's also yesterday. A doctor came to my house to borrow some DVDs because he had a friend who was a Republican who was an engineer, and he wanted to show him Building Number 7 and change his mind. And I was happy to lend him some things. And I think that one great activist, Bruce Gagnon from the Global Network Against Weapons in Space, he said there's no such thing as fast organizing. It's just slow. It's one-on-one. And sometimes the more facts you throw out at people, the more resistant they will be.
There's a time and place for facts, but they have to be responsive and interested in the factual thing before they're helpful.
That's why I started the Listening Project, because I usually, if I can engage people and they answer my questions, then I know where to begin the dialogue. And I have been very gentle and nonviolent in my approach. But at the same time, we do have to organize events and do press releases. And
I want you to take over. I have no idea who your opponent is. And being a Minnesotan now, I don't mess with California politics. But who is your opponent? Should I?
Her name is Anna Eshoo, and poor Anna, in some ways, we marched on her office to demand a congressional investigation of 9/11 back in January 2002, when it was completely...
January 2002. Oh, you were prescient. Yeah,
and
that was very early.
We had a whole television crew with us. We had Fox News.
My goodness.
I think they did it because there were only 9 of us. I organized it in like a day or 2 days.
Uh-huh.
So we were just...
Were you in D.C. or you were in California here?
No, this was in California her congressional office. But we did put her on the spot because she had to respond to the questions that we raised.
Years and years ahead of me. Go ahead.
She of course, was very supportive of the Bush administration, and it was actually in the wake of our raising these questions that Bush and Cheney asked Daschle to limit the investigation and have it overseen by the very people we thought should be investigated.
Right.
And I'm talking about Porter Goss and Bob Graham, you know, who...
Gotcha,
who,
right. Now, is she a Democrat or a Republican? Not that I should dwell on her very much.
She's a Democrat, and she's Nancy Pelosi's best friend, but she also... We marched on her because she was a co-sponsor of the intelligence oversight bill. She's on the intelligence oversight committee, but she was a co-sponsor of legislation to reorganize the intelligence agencies to increase their staff.
I understand. In 2004, the Intelligence Reorganization Act of 2004, right?
Right.
And which
she
is a big
also.
Deal.
She also thinks the 9/11 Commission report was bipartisan, thorough, and completely supported pushing the 9/11 Commission's recommendations on the American people.
Right.
And these are things that I have, of course, strongly opposed. And that's why I'm running. It's basically to raise these issues. And
well, more power to you in that. It takes enormous courage, I think, to run for office. And I don't have that kind of courage. I can go study spies, but I can't run for office in the corrosive environment today. So more good luck to you, because that really is, when it works, it's remarkable and fun to watch democracy actually work on those rare occasions when the true spirits that are out there for the common good can go get things done, despite all the challenges.
Well, I think we see what happens, though, if you do raise forbidden issues. Generally, the media completely ignore you, and you just
you get very marginalized.
Any coverage at all. So.
Right. In fact, I'm going to meet with the Project Censored people, Phillips, the Project Censored, tomorrow. Unfortunately, I couldn't see him before our interview today. But about that, because that's part of what makes it so hard, is you get pushed off to the sidelines and talking to very tiny audiences where other people who have much less to say get the big microphones and the national audiences that you need to win in politics. And you don't have millions of dollars to spend on those stations to make them friendly to you, which they do, typically. Here comes the music. But that's such a racket, and we all struggle with how to get through that.
Well, that's why we have We the People Radio Network.
That's helping.
Yes.
I'll see you in a few minutes.
Okay.
War is over, if you want it. Peace.
Peace.
C-E-A-C-E. C-E-A-C-E.
So this is springtime. The years have been dark. The sun is now shining. Love is the spark. So let's take this springtime.
Hello, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. I'm speaking with Michael Andreg. And Michael, I'm looking at On the Causes of War, and you wrote a whole chapter about cults and spies, and the thinking that emerges that allows them to do these things, which is so evil or destructive, and at solutions, including increasing transparency and casting light on these. But I just wanted to ask you about this. Because people have approached me, and there are a number of cults and a dark side to the intelligence
agencies. Right, there's no doubt about that.
That has been something that is so taboo that most people, you can't even talk about it, because it's just so painful to know that this actually exists in our societies.
Right.
So
you want me to talk about it, even though it's so painful that we can't really talk about it. We'll talk about it anyway.
Well,
okay.
I just, you say
or
that.
Or not. Maybe we shouldn't. Then the problem will go away by not talking about it.
Well, you say that by casting light on it, I think even for me it was really helpful to see how cults worked, because
discouraging,
it helps you to understand the mentality that's dominating this government.
Right. Well, let me give a can I react to a couple things in there?
Okay. Sure.
First off, We should recognize that spies and cults and secret power systems are important in all of these problems, but they're hard to deal with. They're hard to see. When you do find them, what do you do with them? That's a hard question. But they're very important in promoting the really bad things in the world, like wars and whatnot. And second, I will just spare you a long, long lecture on how to specifically deal with evil. But evil is, it's very challenging dealing with it. But it helps. It is solvable. It is a deal. It presents 100 faces of problems, many of which are very difficult to deal with, but they can be dealt with, is my point, to sort of have a positive sense that we can cope with them, even though each one individually is a real pain in the butt, or worse than that, and can be causing the deaths of hundreds or thousands of people in different places. I want to stop rather than get into a lecture on how to deal with each of 57 different varieties of spies. They're different. You have to deal with them differently. But you can. They're all human beings. And they're not 10 feet tall or super. They don't have any superpowers. They're just human beings. That same method, like dealing with soldiers, connecting with their good side first before you start trying to do something is probably key. In all cases, except the absolutely psychopathic, completely conscienceless, ruthless personalities who are a piece of the whole thing. Them you gotta kind of kill or defeat, contain, because they're totally ruthless. And that part, many of my peace friends are not that good at facing the fact of complete ruthlessness, you know?
Well, you say here in Solutions, increased transparency and exposure of the dark side.
Yeah, I try to put solutions in each chapter.
Yeah,
that wasn't obvious.
I think of the institutionalization of torture,
right?
Which to me is the ruling power's way of terrorizing the civilian
population. There was a tremendous organizational evil, right? It was evil, is evil. We went through a bout of it recently, right? Go ahead.
These are one of these impeachable offenses that people are trying to cast light on.
And it's good. That's why it would be good if you would succeed and impeach them and have a public trial where they can't hide and dodge and weave, and there's actual discussion of the evidence that they tortured people and tortured some to death, as you no doubt know.
Yeah, I think Peter Phillips, usually when he gives his talk, he says that, and to help expose the difference between the rhetoric and the reality.
Right, that's very vital in a democracy and in our world and in dealing with evil. It's vital to have these public narratives that expose the truth behind some of the storylines that they put out there.
And this is where the media plays such a role, is that if the media just swallows
it, should be playing a better role,
without asking the hard questions,
right,
then they do get away with murder and torture and these horrific
things. Right, and that's one of the most difficult, serious pieces of the problem in America today, because our journalists just can't look in the mirror and say, you know, I'm a sellout. I've got my job because I voluntarily go along with the unwritten taboos and don't. They can't say that to themselves. So they think everything's pretty much okay except for the various stresses. You know what I mean? It's a shame. And they laugh at people like Carol because they think you don't got it right, you know?
Well, I think we found the most resistance with this information amongst politicians and journalists. I think we are seeing a little more courage in some areas.
People.
Now, but it's taken time. And I mean, in one of our shows on overcoming denial, Robert Metzner, who's written books on consciousness, shared his personal narrative of how he came to be cognizant of 9/11. I was wondering, can you share how you, for all your experience,
some senior peace activists, old ladies of the peace movement in my community, whom I've known for 20 years or more, three of them, actually came to me and said, Michael, you really ought to look at this, and it was Loose Change 2, which is what they asked me to look at, seriously. And then after I looked at it, I got together with them, there was four of us, and I told them, well, yeah, this is disturbing, and it was disturbing enough that I would promise I would spend 1 year studying the subject, and then I'd produce an official opinion on it, because it was that important and that complicated. So I spent a year doing it, and then another year producing the documentary you mentioned, Rethinking 9/11. And that's how. You asked, how did I get involved? I got involved that way, not from, there's many other routes that people get into it. But I pretty much bought the official story, skeptical though I am in most ways. I was busy with the other things, the war in Iraq and the other things that were going on, and was not focused on the anomalies of the 9/11 story until some grandmothers from the peace community brought Loose Change 2 to my attention. So people like you had been out there 4 years getting attention to some of those disturbing truths. And from a strictly analytic perspective, the fact that I had never seen Building 7 go down, and so many others, you must have encountered thousands and thousands of people, Carol, who have never heard of Building 7 until you told them, right? That should wake up any person with a serious BS detector in their head. How can, there's something fundamentally wrong when you can go through an event of that magnitude, start a global war, and the whole country doesn't even know that a huge skyscraper came down in New York City, right?
Yeah. Well,
something,
actually,
there's something rotten at the bottom of that pile of
right.
core columns.
Yeah, and I have to say that, like, personally, I didn't know about it till like 13 or 14 months.
That's information control. That cannot happen by accident.
Yeah.
See, is what
yeah.
I'm saying, and that fact alone is so shocking and sobering that people, normal psychology, casts around, looks for any answer that'll get you off the hook of dealing with the fundamental corruption of your news system that implies. The bastards have got your major media by the cojones, and you're not going to get the truth on real power in America from the major media because they're bought and paid for. And you know it. I don't need to be so rude to you. By the way, you're growing alternative media here with this We the People radio. Do you have any clue whether there's anyone listening to our program? Not to be rude, but just curious. Besides my daughter. Hi, Sierra.
Well, it actually is archived, and we do get callers, and we do get feedback. So I'm sure that there
good.
Are
I hope there's somebody out there.
And it is broadcast in Austin, Texas.
The best town in Texas.
Austin, Texas.
Austin is.
It's a remote little
town.
City, and
yeah.
Actually,
probably shunned by some parts of West Texas. Probably think it's the center of evil in the modern world. But I love Austin.
This closes the first hour, so if you'll come back, we're going to start in the second hour in just a few minutes.
We'll see you.
The Bill of Rights protects every American's God-given right to keep and bear arms. Now that right is being seriously undermined as legally registered rifles are being confiscated in some parts of our country. If we're not careful, we may find ourselves with no right to own guns. And that's where Gun Owners of America comes in. Gun Owners of America is in Washington every day fighting for you to keep that right. Congressman Ron Paul has called GOA the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. You need to be part of this great grassroots group of activists who are keeping the heat on their members of Congress. Find out right now how you can join. Call 888-886-GUNS and get started receiving their fact-filled newsletters and action alerts. Call 888-886-GUNS or go to their webpage at gunowners.org and help make your voice heard in Washington. Make that call right now and call Gun Owners of America at 888-886-GUNS. Remember, it's not just about gun control, it's about control.
Online and on demand, this is We the People Radio Network.